IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. I'm your host, Rakshit, a research analyst at Takshashila Institution. And today, we are going to take a deep dive into Chinese Communist Party's history learning regulations. To talk about this issue today, I have Manoj Kevalramani, the chairperson of Indo-Pacific Studies Program at Takshashila. Happy to have you, Manoj.
Thank you so much, Rakshit. Good to be here.
Manoj, many scholars believe that history is a religion to Chinese. I don't know if you agree with it, but how should we understand this phrase? Why do you think history education is so important for the party?
Right. So, I mean, I don't know if I would call it a religion, but I would say that history has historically been extremely important in terms of the politics in China, even during the era of the different dynasties. I mean, there has been a culture of recording written history. And usually history of the previous dynasty was written by the history of the succeeding dynasty. So you had this ability that, you know, essentially rulerships saw history as a tool for political legitimacy and to build continuity. And therefore, whichever successive dynasty wrote the history of their predecessors, they wrote in their they characterize the previous ruling dynasties as essentially predecessors, but also themselves as legitimate heirs of correcting all the wrongdoings of the previous leaderships. So this has been a pattern. So the good part of this is obviously that you have therefore a lot of recorded history, but the tragic bit of it is that this is all essentially politicized history as opposed to history which is necessarily in search of truth of a particular period. So to that extent, I think history has deeply mattered in terms of Chinese politics. And I think the Communist Party understands this. It's rooted obviously in that tradition and it understands this. And if you go back to Mao, if you go back to Deng, if you go back to Xi right now, what you will see is that each of them have used history as a political tool to find space to build continuity, but also find ways to break from the past. And that's why I think it matters, right? They see history not as something to investigate and understand the truth, but they see history as something that can be an enabling tool to legitimize one's current rule, but also policy directions.
All right. So recently, the Central Committee of the Communist Party of China has released regulations on studying the party's history, right? It outlines key objectives and principles embedded in the newly introduced regulations, which emphasizes the need for regular, long-term study of the party's history. The document, comprising 6 chapters and 34 articles, delves into critical aspects of this study. Would you please tell us, Manoj, what this regulation is broadly about and what are the primary objectives and tasks that it seeks to achieve?
Right. So before I actually get into the current regulations, I think it's useful to get a little bit of a background into why this is happening at present and why these regulations are coming out at present. So in 2021, which was the centenary of the party, so the Communist Party of China was founded in 1921. 2021 was the 100-year anniversary of the party's founding. And in that year in February, you saw the party launch what was called a history learning and education campaign. It started in February that year. On February 20th, there was a meeting in Beijing in which you saw the beginning of the campaign. And then subsequently, the campaign culminated towards the end of the year. Its highlight was, of course, I mean, there were two big highlights. One was Xi Jinping's speech on July 1st, which marked sort of the centenary of the party. Secondly, in November 2021, you had what was called the third history resolution that the party approved. So those were sort of the two key points. Now, why does the third history resolution matter? I think it's useful to go back and look at why there was a first history resolution, a second history resolution. So the first history resolution was under Mao Zedong. That was a critical document which essentially allowed Mao to solidify his position in charge of the party, essentially made him the be-all and end-all of the party. I mean, he'd obviously consolidated significant power before that. But in 1945, when that resolution came up, he essentially became the be-all and the end-all of the party. Then fast forward, you had the second history resolution, which essentially sought to break from the past, break from Maoist policies. This was under Deng Xiaoping in the early 1980s. And the objective was that can we move away from class struggle towards modernization, economic development, and so on and so forth? And can we also recognize that there are some historical errors that have been made and acknowledge those and then at least outline those, because the party stability is important, right? So that identified some of Mao's policies, particularly his sense of dictatorship that had been cultivated and his complete command of the party, as problematic, and that paved the way for an era of collective leadership and so on and so forth. Under Xi Jinping, you had the third history resolution in November 2021, which is what I said. Now, this was an interesting resolution because I think Xi Jinping, what he tried to do in this was he tried to synthesize and sort of harmonize both those, right? There was a continuity with the past versions of history. But the key part of the resolution was to essentially make the point that Xi Jinping is the legitimate sort of heir of this historical ride of the party, and he is special, and his rule therefore must persist. So he didn't sort of overturn any previous conclusions like the 1980s resolution did. He essentially said that we need to have continuity. We need to not criticize our historical failings. We need to understand that there were failings, of course. The resolution talks about, the Cultural Revolution as a failing, but it doesn't really dwell on it. But it says that we need to understand that the path that we've taken was a necessary path to come to where we are. In that, of course, we made some mistakes. But right now, where we are is because of that path. And therefore, we must appreciate it. And therefore, criticisms of Mao were not really something that he would appreciate, right? And we've seen that right now, right? Last year, on Mao's birthday, there was a big celebration which Xi Jinping attended and he spoke at. So there's been a rehabilitation of Mao in some sense. So this is the sort of pathway through which this history learning business has been consolidated. And the objective of it is to essentially legitimize Xi Jinping's control over the party and to legitimize and bind everybody together behind what Xi Jinping's vision is for not just the party's growth, but also for the Chinese economy and society going forward, right? So it's basically, in November 2021, when the third history resolution was passed, there was also an explanatory note which Xi Jinping issued, in which he said, quite categorically, he was saying that these history resolutions are essentially instruments to build consensus for future policy direction. So it's not something where we are actually investigating history or studying history. So that's a bit of a background. And to just quickly answer the question that you asked about what is this resolution? So like I said, there was a history learning campaign, which basically meant that you needed to make sure that everybody across the party and the society is on the same page and there are no difficult questions being asked about historical choices that the party has made and the implications of those historical choices on present-day policy, and therefore questioning Xi Jinping's authority. So therefore, you want to build harmony. So this regulation that has been issued now becomes a mandate for everybody. It gives a guideline for everybody, not just people in the party, but also state officials. But beyond that, also broader society, schools, universities, everybody, where history learning must become compulsory. And what kind of history, therefore, must be taught is what this document talks about. And we can delve deeply into that going forward. But that's the agenda, right? The objective is that.
Right. And has the regulation specifically mentioned who is responsible for carrying out the work for the party history and education? There's a call, because I'm asking because there's a call to use new era civilization practice centers for this purpose. What exactly do they mean by it?
Right. So, yes, the resolution does. So, the regulation does talk about you know, who is supposed to carry out the key work and all of that. So there is a central leading group for propaganda, ideological and cultural work that is going to be primarily responsible for the overall implementation of this regulation. Of course, the Central Propaganda Department, the Organization Department, the Central Party History and Literature Research Institute, again, something that was founded under Xi Jinping, those are going to be key actors. Other departments across, because you're going to be doing this as a whole of society activity, so lots of other departments, provincial governments, local governments, everybody will essentially, universities, schools, like I said, everybody will essentially be responsible for implementing them. But the key agency that is in charge of everything, that will be doing overall coordination, supervision, is the leading group for propaganda, ideological and cultural work. The regulation also quite clearly outlines what is the primary task. What are the primary tasks? There are four tasks that they talk about. And these are really interesting because they underscore the earlier point that I was trying to make about why this is a political objective. And I think this is not unique to China, right? It's not unique to the Communist Party. History is often a battleground in present day politics. You can see that in India, you can see that in the United States, you can see that in Europe, where there is essentially some sort of a cultural conflict going on around what past has or what the past has meant and how the past impacts the future. You can see the Black Lives Matter movement in that context. You can see the taking down of statues in Europe in that context. You can see what's happening in India in that context, where history is deeply political. And in China, what essentially the Communist Party is saying is that we must have not just the dominant narrative on history, but the only narrative on history. So therefore, the regulation talks about four primary objectives. The first is to understand, to enhance study history so that you enhance your understanding and of reasoning, which basically means that you need to understand why the Communist Party of China has succeeded in doing what it's doing, why Marxism works, why socialism with Chinese characteristics is good and works for China. And through history, learning of history, essentially build your confidence in the party's leadership and its theories. So clearly there's a political objective to it. It's not about finding out actual reasons of how society has functioned. The second objective is study history to enhance trust. This is, again, quite straightforward, that you need to enhance your faith and trust and belief in Marxism, communism, socialism with Chinese characteristics, and, you know, have confidence in the Chinese system and become, as the regulation says, firm believers and faithful practitioners of the ideals of communism and socialism with Chinese characteristics. The third is to appreciate morality or venerate virtue, which basically means that you must be able to cultivate, party members must be able to cultivate certain kinds of moral qualities, which are primary quality is loyalty to the party. And in Xi Jinping's era, loyalty to the party first means loyalty to Xi Jinping. And of course, the morality of, you know, being strict with oneself in terms of discipline, in terms of corruption, making sure that there is a gain to the people, because at the end of the day, unless there is performance legitimacy, it hurts the party. So, and the final, fourth final objective is study history to implement practical actions, which basically means that can history be your guide to try and figure out how do you implement certain kinds of tasks today? So what has worked in the past? Can you learn from that? But beyond that also, to understand that what the party has done in the past was not bad, right? So you appreciate party spirit, improve your assessment of the situation and understanding of situations based on politics of the day, and therefore appreciate where you have come from rather than being critical of the past. So it's a deeply conformist agenda, which will be implemented top down, like I said, with the leading group being responsible.
Stay tuned to All Things Policy. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
Manoj, so you have already mentioned how one would study in this regulation about Mao, how one is able to criticize Mao also, right? But what is the exact content of history learning and education in this regulation? Is there a room to, you know, add certain sections of history and, you know, omit certain sections of history?
So I think that it's useful to go back to that for anybody who's interested, and we'll try and share in the show notes the third history resolution for anybody who's interested. It's essentially going to be driven from that. So there's a certain articles in the regulation. So there are 34 articles across the regulation. And what you will see is that from Article 10, 11 onwards, you've got some detail on what is the kind of content that will be taught or that should be taught, right? So, and essentially it's about you need to use the three history resolutions from 45, 81 to 2021 as your primary content. You need to read through speeches of Mao, Deng, Jiang, Hu, and Xi Jinping. So the five key general secretaries, you need to read through their speeches. And there will be obviously selections. You will see a reader that's put together and so on and so forth. That's what usually happens. So you'll see carefully curated curriculum being designed. You'll need to understand, therefore, based on that, why what the party did was good. And therefore, the objective is to build alignment with the ideas of the Central Committee at present and Xi Jinping. So that's essentially going to be the content, right? Where you're going to use the three history resolutions primarily and the rest of speeches, select speeches and select words. You're also going to do this education through different sort of tools, right? You're going to be using, there'll be mandatory courses at different levels, like I said, at party schools, at universities, at primary schools, middle schools, so on and so forth. Grassroots party organizations will be asked, or the regulation actually asks them to incorporate history learning as part of their annual performance evaluation and annual work plans. So it becomes a mandatory task for every cadre to engage in this exercise. And it'll be part of their evaluation as to how they do on this. And how they do on this is basically about how much loyalty they demonstrate. You will use, you know, practical things such as museums, trips, you know, cultural relics, memorial sites, and so on and so forth to teach people. So then you again go back and you say, well, look, you glorify certain parts of history. Lots of media content that will be created, movies, television, literature, you know, all of that will be created. And that becomes part of sort of online content. So if you go back in the past few years, there was a long series of documentary series which was produced, which is available in English also, about the party's 100-year history. And that is, you know, it's a jaundiced, one-sided narrative, but that kind of content will be created. And then, of course, you do things like you select certain dates, let's say for certain specific campaigns that were held, like military campaigns, certain historical moments, the sort of memorial services and birthday commemorations for deceased leaders. You use all of those to publicize and popularize the idea of history. Again, it's not uncommon, right? I mean, like say, in most countries you celebrate, right? The birthday of a deceased founder and things like that. So you're using these moments, but you're, the key part is that the party is picking and choosing who it defines as role models based on its current priorities. And those are the people that will be popularized. So I don't think you will see necessarily, say, in the next few years, popular memorials for, say, the late Chinese Premier Li Keqiang. You're not going to see anything around Zhao Ziyang or Hu Yaopang. You're not going to see those kinds of things. You're going to see select people that Xi Jinping wants to promote because they serve his agenda, and you'll see that. You'd asked me that question about this new era civilization centers, right? I mean, that's those are something that have been established over a period of time. They are not new. They've been established for some time. I think the first guidance on those came in July 2020. Their essential job is to, you know, create a, you know, essentially have cultural and social influence on the people. So those are sort of your very local propaganda units. So they will do study and dissemination of party theory. They will be doing political training. They will be doing promotions of custom. So like say when you're organizing a revolutionary red tour, tourism trip, they will be a place to something that will coordinate that. Those will be a place for volunteer services to be offered. So they become like your, I mean, for the lack of a better analogy, if you think from an Indian context, they become like your party shakha, you know, your party sort of branch where things can happen, where you also get ideas which are publicized, but you also sort of engage in some volunteer work and so on and so forth, right? And the objective is at the grassroots level, you are promoting the kind of ideals and values that you want to through different sets of actions, right? You mobilize people, you guide them in their thinking, you provide some degree of services. And that's how they broadly work, or that's their objective broadly.
Manoj, we are talking about the history. I mean, the Communist Party's history learning regulations. But there have been so many times that you have mentioned about Xi. In one of the objectives, you have mentioned that one of the objectives was to study history to venerate virtue, which basically means complete loyalty to Xi. My question is there a particular section on Xi Jinping thought on socialism with Chinese characteristics for a new era? I mean, how important is that section if it's there in the regulation?
Yeah, so if you read through the text of the regulation, what you will see is that, I mean, every key ideological contribution in the party's pantheon, so Marxism-Leninism, Mao Zedong thought, Deng Xiaoping theory, the thought of three represents, the theory of three represents, Hu Jintao's scientific outlook on development, and then Xi Jinping thought on socialism with Chinese characteristics for a new era, all get mentioned. And then after that, you get specific references that the current regulations have been formulated under the guidance of Xi Jinping thought. So this is basically Xi Jinping saying that he's giving a nod, like I said, he does not want historical discontinuity. He wants historical continuity because he's not somebody who wants the party to disintegrate. He wants the party stronger. And he looks at this as a process of making the party stronger. Because if you have debates over the past of the party, to him, it potentially weakens the party. If you all come to the same page and say, fine, we're going to airbrush some of these things, it basically legitimizes the party as having tremendous wisdom and him being somebody who's following in that suit. So firstly, the regulation says that they are guided by Xi Jinping thought on socialism with Chinese characteristics for a new era. It specifically, Article 7, I think, quite specifically says that the idea is for people to grasp Xi's thoughts, basic viewpoints, its worldview, and therefore transform that thought into a powerful force that not only strengthens ideals, tempers the party spirit, guides practices, and promotes work. Likewise, subsequent articles also specifically talk about Xi Jinping thought being sort of the center of gravity. And again, on the same day as the regulations were made public, you had an interview by an official from the Central Party History and Literature Research Institute, who was quite clear in saying that, you know, the first primary thing that was considered was to ensure that, you know, we follow the guidance of Xi Jinping thought and the party constitution, which also places Xi Jinping thought on a pedestal, and that we need to ensure our political, the political direction that we follow is correct. And again, he made 4 points of what was considered while putting these regulations together. And I will not blame you with, you know, I'll not bore you with these 4 points, but I will tell you that the first of those was essentially about implementing the spirit of Xi Jinping's speeches and instructions on learning and education of party history. This is essentially agenda-driven based on with the effort to try and cement Xi Jinping's position. The one other point that I will make is that there's a specific reference in the document to, historical nihilism, which basically is the idea that there has to be only one view of history and there cannot be other views of history. And the document quite clearly says that, you know, the job is to correctly handle the relationship. The purpose of the regulation is to correctly handle the relationship between history and reality, politics and academia, research and propaganda, and take a clear stand against, quote, erroneous thoughts and views such as historical nihilism, fight against words and deeds that tarnish the image of the party and the country, slander party and state leaders, smear heroes and role models, and distort the history of the party, which basically means that there is no space for an alternative view on anything that has happened in the past. And that's the agenda of this thing. And Xi Jinping is at the helm of that agenda because he believes that it legitimizes his position.
Right. So thank you so much, Manoj. If I can take away a few key points from this conversation, it is that the aim of the studying history for the party is to form a unanimous consensus to move politics forward smoothly. And four main objectives that you told are study history to enhance understanding of reasoning, which basically means that not only the dominant, but our narrative should be the only narrative, right? And second one being strengthen the faith in Marxism, communism, and the belief in socialism with Chinese characteristics, which basically means study history to enhance trust. The third one being study history to venerate virtue, which basically means loyalty to the party and Xi. And the fourth being the study history to implement practical actions, which keeps all the entire, everyone on the same boat, the members of the party, right?
Yeah, and so, if I could just end by saying that, and none of that is the actual way that one must actually study history. So unfortunately, this is what happens when history gets politicized, whichever country you are in.
Right. So on that note, thank you so much, Manoj, for sharing your beautiful insights. It's been really amazing having a conversation with you. And to all our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. See you all in the next episode of All Things Policy.
Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.